If there was a Nobel Prize for being a dickhead,
that's you.
Troy Carrington would win it every year. Troy Carrington's AFL footy career ended when his leg got mangled as he ran through the banner on grand final day.
Did you really break your leg in 9 places?
Round here we call him Town Killer because of the greenie protests he led that shut down the Bodger Creek timber mill.
Town Killer! You as a club need to decide, merge or fold.
You can't just force us into a merger.
What's a merger?
Oh, it's when one shit team joins up with another shit team to make a slightly less shit team.
You can get quadruple your funding by accessing grants for employed refugees for the rebuild.
What good are club rooms if we don't have a team?
These blokes can swing a hammer, I reckon they can kick a footy, yeah?
I am very unfamiliar with this game.
How's your English?
English okay. Australian, not so good.
Is that your family?
No, this was already on wall when I come here. Of course this is my family. What do you think, Saeed Creepy Man put photo of strangers on wall?
Thanks for talking to us. How's your Cinefest Oz experience going so far?
It's been going great. I didn't know what to expect because I've never been here before.
So. My first one as well.
Yeah, right. Small town. It's like a little town that you never knew has this really cool love of cinema. And they've got this great setup and all the volunteers are just so lovely. And the audiences are so keen to just see everything that's on. Like, it's amazing. Like, you can't knock this kind of appreciation for cinema.
Yeah, and how did you feel when you found out that the merger was up for the $100,000 film prize?
It was pretty crazy. Like, weirdly enough, my editor is from WA. Chris Mill, he's a Perth boy and he's obsessed with Perth. He only talks about it all the time. and he said when we were editing, he was like, you know what, you should enter Cinefest Oz. And I was like, oh, okay, what are you talking about? And then he introduced me to Cinefest and what it was and talked about the film prize and how they screen the films and... I was like, oh, okay, cool. And then we got a phone call out of the blue saying that we'd been nominated. And I was like, that was weird. So Chris was super pumped that his premonition came true.
Yeah, for sure. So talking about the merger, how did the project come your way? Like, how did you first get involved?
I cast Damien in my first film, Backyard Ashes.
Yep.
And I knew he was really funny. And then as I got to know him, I learned that he was a great comedy writer and stage writer. And he's got this real knack for writing one-man shows that... he bases his career off, and that's how he does most of his comedy. It's very theatrical. He plays multiple characters. He doesn't tend to do direct stand-up where it's just Damien talks to crowd.
Yep.
He writes narrative-based comedy. And he said, I've written this one called The Merger, so I saw it at the Brisbane Comedy Festival and immediately loved it. Like, the way that it sort of made people laugh and then just pin drop quiet through the dramatic moments. And I was like, wow, that's pretty rare to be able to do that. And it felt really cinematic to me because I grew up in that area. I was like, oh, regional football. Yeah, I played that my whole life. Regional towns, I grew up there. Comedy, okay, great. And then the refugee issue, I do a lot of youth work for Life Without Barriers, which supports young kids in foster care, but also we have a refugee program.
Yep.
So we support kids who are literally put on a boat over here on their own. And we help them sort of build a new life in this country with no family. So... all of those boxes were ticked for me.
Yep.
And I was like, this is the next film I want to make.
So you mentioned Backyard Ashes. What did you learn on that film that you took for when you started working on the merger?
Yeah, so much. I shot Backyard Ashes literally in my grandma's backyard for $250,000. So, and all the film was paid for with local sponsorship and investment from local people in Wagga. So we were just making shots up. Like, I had Daniel Weivel, who's an incredible DOP.
Yeah.
And we would literally meet that morning, grab a coffee and talk about the shots for the day. So there was no time to pre-plan, little time for costume and pre-production, just making it all up on the fly. I knew about working with actors, so I could talk to the actors and I can get the performance, and I wrote the script with Coxie, so I knew that part.
Yep.
But everything else in between was just, shit, let's figure it out on the fly. But then with the merger, we actually had a little bit of luxury of pre-production, funny little thing called pre-production, where you get to just, I finally got to location scout and recce and tech recce and work with my DOP really closely on, you know, how we're going to shoot the film, what's the visual approach going to be. We had a limited budget, so we had to be really, you know, strategic about how we shot, very symmetrically, sort of treat the frame like it's a stage that the actors can perform within, so that the wide kind of covers off most of our coverage.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Yeah, but it's also a nod to the theatrical kind of background of the film.
Well, it worked.
It does, It was a theatre piece first, let it be a frame, and then jump in for coverage.
Yeah. So how much of the merger cast had worked with you before in theatre or your Backyard Ashes?
That's a really good question. How many? I think Damien, a lot of the locals had. Josh McConville I knew from NIDA.
Yep.
So I knew I always wanted Josh in the film because he was so great, and we've been looking for something to do together for almost 10 years, which was fantastic. Damien had worked with a lot of the comedians before, Cody and those guys, and Goxie. So I wanted that comedic feel, but Kate Mulvaney I saw on stage in The Seed, which is her sort of autobiographical play that she won a whole bunch of awards for. So yeah. I knew I wanted to get Kate because she was incredible, but I'd never met John before. I had a coffee with him in Manly and talked about the project and then got him on board, and he was all over it. Now he loves it. But very few of them, but there's all these random connections. So Francis Kamara, who plays one of the refugee characters from Sierra Leone, I actually taught him in year three. I used to be a primary school teacher. So I taught him in year three when him and his family first moved from Australia, from Sierra Leone to Australia.
Wow.
And I taught him as a 6-year-old. And then 15 years later, I was casting him in a film. And he's a second-year acting student at CSU in Wagga, so that's his first role. There's all this synergy like that that's just really kind of cool about the film.
You mentioned it was Damien's one-man show that sort of you had a look at that and then decided to do the feature. How hard was it adapting, working with Damien and adapting the show to a feature film format?
Yeah, working with Damien was the easy part because we get along so well and we both have so much respect for comedy.
Yeah.
But the challenging part is, how do you take a one-man show that's where Damien plays all the characters and two of the main characters are sock puppets and Fran is never even seen, she's just spoken at off stage.
Okay.
Angie never existed as a character in the whole film. So the stage play was just Troy, Neil, Bull and Saeed predominantly. And then Goober and Snapper were sock puppets.
Okay, yeah.
And so we had to sort of go, okay, well, who is Fran? Who is Goober and Snapper? How do we flesh these guys out? What do they do for a living? How do they connect to the town? You know, and then building the visual language too, because the dialogue was always going to work and the jokes were working theatrically. But getting the drama and the visuals to kind of work and making a visual film, not just a talk fest, was one challenge. And then Angie was pivotal to that, writing a really strong female character who can cut through the sort of male bullshit of football club rooms and regional living and be strong and independent. So I think that was really key. And the genius of Damien's stuff is that thread of grief that runs through everything. So Angie losing her partner, Neil losing his dad, the same person, Bull losing their son, Saeed. That thing ties everybody together.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously you were born and raised in Wagga. Where the merger was shot, how did you go with the local community, getting them on board and getting involved?
It was great. I spent my whole life working in the Wagga community as a teacher, doing community musicals, mentoring young kids in the town for near on 28 years before I went to NIDA. So I built up a lot of goodwill in the town, I would say. So when it came time to shooting Backyard Ashes, people were like overwhelmingly supportive. And we got so much ridiculous support. It was crazy. And then when the merger came along, I think that's a great thing that small towns and regional communities, if you've invested in them, they'll invest in you. And if you're flying into town and you're just trying to use up resources and take advantage of people, then they know they're not stupid. But if you've literally committed your life to that place and that town and those people, they'll bend over backwards. And I think there's something about small towns that you have to rely on each other. You can't grow up in, Wagga is ravaged by floods regularly with the river. And over hundreds of years, it's been flooded multiple times. So I think you build up a resilience and a level of support. So when a big film comes, they're just so proud to share the town and the generosity of the place that we've got everything, food, water, transport, petrol, flights, accommodation, nuts. People were just making sandwiches and bringing them to set and, sleepovers at people's houses, cooking dinner for cast and crew. It was just, that whole community feel was really genuine. And actually, probably the best story is on day one, the Multicultural Council of Wagga actually hosted us with about 150 to 200 people from the refugee community, and they put a barbecue on for us to welcome us to the film. It was like, we want to welcome you to the film. So they did a huge barbecue, and they played music, and we all danced together. It was this kind of surreal, unplanned start to the whole filming process. It was really beautiful. And we actually met cast on that day. The young girl that played Saeed's daughter.
Yep.
She was at the barbecue and she came along, and the girl that we cast to play it couldn't do the role in the end. So this little girl jumped in and she was wonderful.
Yep.
And we met six other cast members on that one day. It was amazing.
Now, how did you go, I'm sorry for this, but I've forgotten the character's name. How did you go casting the young kid in it?
Neil?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that was always a challenge because
he was amazing. Yeah, he's great. Hilarious.
Yeah, he's hilarious and dry as toast.
Yeah.
Look, that was a real search. We knew that was important because Damien had written a really great character there. And then we were like, oh, that's fantastic. And then we're like, oh no, someone has to play that. Oh crap. So we have to find someone who can be like wry and funny and sarcastic and but also be an observer.
Yeah.
On the world, and he always tells other people, like granddad says this, or someone says, so he's reflecting the adults' yeah. opinions of the town. But then he has a little dramatic turn where you have to earn that feeling of losing his dad. And so we auditioned lots and lots of kids, and then we met Rafferty in Melbourne. And Raf's dad's actually a filmmaker, so Raf's okay. dad made the film Sanctum, and oh, yeah. he's second unit director on a lot of James Cameron's films. So Alastair Grierson's yeah. a fine filmmaker in his own right, so Raf's grown up around film sets. So he knows his way around a little too well. But when he came in, he was just so confident and he would just sit there and like, yeah, no, I'm just doing this stuff here. And then, oh, you want to do the audition? Yeah, no worries. Here we go. And I was like, oh, that's the kid.
That's a kid.
That level of confidence is what you need so that it feels real. But no, he's a joy. Like when you're 9 years old and you've got 5 weeks of shooting on a film set, that's a lot of work.
Oh, yeah.
And he has a lot of scenes.
Yeah.
And he did really well to be consistent and get all the way through. And I love how funny and relatable he is in the film.
Yeah, for sure. Now, you have, as you said before, you have a background in theatre.
Mm.
What can you achieve in film that is different from what you can do in theatre?
Oh, man.
I know, it's a tough question.
It is, yeah. Theatre's like, there's that live immediacy of everything where, you know, you're feeding off the energy of the audience. But in film, it's so much more about planning, but you've got these little moments to be in the moment.
Yeah.
And that's what's, you've got to be really aware of that. Like, you do all this fussing, all this hair and makeup and final touches and lighting and camera planning and plotting, blah, blah, blah. And then suddenly you're like, great, we've probably got 4 takes. And you're like, oh, right, okay, great. So I've got 4 goes at this. So you have to get really focused on exactly what it is that you want in that moment. And I think the main thing is that the power of cinema for me is always in the power of a close-up. In theatre, the only close-up I can get is to bring an actor downstage centre or
yep.
and let the audience see them a bit closer. But the power of cinema to get you right up into a character at a really pivotal moment to connect is essential. So there's a key moment with Angie when she's listening to Neil and Troy talk and you've just got one really nice...
That was a really good shot.
And to let the actor do the work and sell the emotion of it and one nicely crafted shot can say so much.
Well, that's the thing is like, you did, did you stick around in the cinema much and see the crowd reaction?
Yeah, I watched the whole film. Yeah.
Okay. It's really interesting to see a film with such a mix of comedy and drama.
Yeah.
How did you go finding that balance? Because you're laughing at 1 second and then the next shot you're like, ah. Oh.
Yeah.
But then you go, yeah, that's okay.
It's my favourite thing about the film, and that was the hardest part in the edit suite and the writing process. Damien's fantastic at the writing, and so we knew, it's like, oh, that's really tense, and then, so I've got to make them laugh here now. Oh, thanks, that's great. Just got to turn it on a dime. Or the other way around, you've got to make them laugh and then go crush.
Yeah.
And so being super mindful of where, I used to highlight those moments in the script and put a tag next to it, and so I knew when I was coming up to it. And I'm watching the actors do it that I had what I needed to cut it. And then it's all about the timing of the edit and it's all about the build and release of tension.
Yeah.
And comedy and drama is both about build of tension and release. So it's all about how you build it and how you release it. So if you keep it really simple like that, you don't overthink it, which is cool. But that's my favorite thing is watching people just like sniffle and then laugh.
Yeah.
It's like, and I don't think we do that. I think New Zealand films do that really well.
Yeah,
it's my favourite thing about Taika Waititi. He's one of my favourite.
Hunt for the World of People is incredible. And it's sort of the same sort of thing, like laugh, drama.
Yeah. Exactly. When she gives him the little hottie in his bed and then they're at the table and she plays the song for him and then she passes away and you're like, oh, it crushes you. And I think Kiwis do that great and we support Kiwi films in this country so much. They kill it at the box office.
Yeah.
But as Australian films, we don't do that enough.
You know a lot about putting sport and comedy into a feature film now.
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Is there a third comedy in your future to round out the trilogy?
Yeah, I need to do a Baz Luhrmann, was it Red Curtain trilogy?
Yeah.
I need like a Red Leather trilogy or something, or a White Line Fever trilogy.
Yeah.
No, I'd probably try and avoid sport on the next one if I could, so I don't get...
Do you know, I think you should wrap it out.
Yeah, you reckon?
Yeah, it's just...
Soccer?
You've got to find a really Aussie sport, but I think... I think, yeah.
Curling, yeah. Something like that. Like, no, I think I was writing a film. I wrote a screenplay about the 1974 World Cup Socceroos.
Yeah, okay.
Which is an incredible... Have you ever heard that story? It's incredible.
Yeah, I think I read an article a while back.
Yeah, so I wrote a screenplay with Peter Cox and we were talking about getting that made but just ran out of time. Well, the merger got in the way, to be honest.
Well, there you go.
But that's an amazing story about the first...
There's the end of your trilogy.
Yeah, that's it. Soccer, I could wrap it all up.
Yeah. And lastly, what do you want audiences take away after watching the merger?
I think I didn't want to make something that was too preachy or was trying to make an audience feel a certain way. I just wanted the material to speak for itself.
Yeah.
Let them just enjoy a film and come out and go, exactly what you said to me. Wow, I laughed and I cried in that film.
Yeah.
I know that sounds a bit corny and weird, but I really think that's true. Like,
yeah.
Isn't that what cinematic experience is about? And yeah. Most films do one or the other, and then sometimes we get films that can do both, and you kind of walk out going, oh, wow, I went through something there.
Yeah.
But more importantly, I wanted to make something where I felt like Australian audiences saw themselves on screen. And it wasn't, a right-wing, we hate refugees, or a left-wing, you're a bastard. It was just,
yeah.
We're just humans, and we all share things in common, and we all care about each other.
And I hope exactly.
that heart just comes through, because I think that's what most people really are.
Well, I think you're going to go pretty well at the box office for this
one. Thanks, that'd be nice. That'd be good.
No worries. Well, thanks for talking to us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
No worries.
Duh. Thanks very much for talking to us, John. I appreciate you taking the time.
My pleasure.
How's your Cinefest experience going so far?
I arrived at 4 p.m. yesterday afternoon, and it's been fabulous ever since.
Have you been to many of these sort of film festivals before?
I've been to a lot of film festivals, but not Cinefest Oz. So,
yep.
Although I'd heard about it by reputation. And so I was looking forward to it a lot. I have been in this part of the world quite a few times. So I'd never been to Busselton, but now Busselton's come to me.
Yeah, exactly right. So onto the merger, how did this film come your way? How did you get attached to the project?
It was pretty simple. About a year and a half ago or so, Mark sent me the script.
Yeah.
So that's where I came into it. I hadn't seen Damien's one-man show. So I read the script and it had a lot of heart, a lot of soul, and a lot of humour. And then Mark and I had a chat in Manly, in Sydney. And I said, yes, please, that'd be good.
Yeah.
And my auntie Nan lives in Wagga where we shot it. So
two birds with one stone. Yeah, that's it. So obviously you play Bull Barlow. Mm. He's like the patriarch of the town, ran the timber mill, was running the footy club, and he has a bit of drama in his life as well. What is it about that character that sort of sucked you into playing it?
There are a lot of Bull Barlows in the world. What's happening is that the old towns are all changing,
yep.
all over the country, probably all over the world. And so I was interested in that, and I was interested in the simplicity of where he was coming from, and that it was coming from grief and the loss of his whole way of life.
Yeah.
Yes, he'd lost the timber mill. So I went up to Wingham and to the timber mill up there, which is the last timber mill that a family concern owns.
Yep.
So I could talk to them about what it's like to... They will probably close their timber mill for economic reasons soon after seven generations.
Wow.
And to understand more about how a town, a timber town, can depend on that kind of livelihood and that length of culture for them too, because
yeah.
six or seven generations for people like you and I is no small amount of time.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he's lost his son as well, which his son and heir.
Yeah.
So he's lost the kingdom.
Yeah.
Lost pretty much everything. But then his directness kind of appealed to me too. He simply says, no, I don't hate them. They just don't belong here.
Yeah.
And he says, quite simply at one point, I don't like change.
Yeah.
So it was fascinating to see how then when like a lot of people don't like change, particularly if they're ignorant of the people who seem to be making the change.
Yeah.
But from his point of view, it's not only that he's grieving, but he can see in Troy that Troy's disloyal, favourite other son, if you like,
yeah.
that is causing this problem to his heart and soul and spirit, not just...
Yeah, a bit of inner turmoil there.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, I really love The Merger. I don't think I've laughed in an Australian film that much in a long time. And they find the humour and the drama, the balance is just perfect. What was it like filming those sort of sequences where you were like comedic 1 second? Like, obviously, the first time we see you, I think, is in the hospital.
Yeah, with his at the start, bum out.
With his bum out. And then you start getting into all these themes later on down the track and it starts to get quite dramatic as well. How, as an actor, how is that for you to jump back and forth?
If the story is well constructed in the first place and you're talking about believable characters instead of caricatures,
yeah.
it's not a problem because Shakespeare had some very funny jokes in some very serious plays.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you like it, it represents life as it is, because that's what our lives are like, isn't it? One moment the world is falling down around you,
yep.
and the next moment something absurd happens.
Yeah.
And that's just the way life is.
Well, yeah, The Merger has some very serious subjects built into it.
Yeah.
Do you think comedy is a really good way to handle those sort of situations?
It certainly doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people last night after they saw it said, thank God there's some hope, because we're plagued with the problems of the world constantly mm-hmm. through the media and if not in our own homes. And so I think people were a bit relieved to see that it's possible to deal with those very serious and sad subjects and still retain your sense of humour.
Yeah.
It is, after all, our joy to have a sense of humour. That's what makes us human beings and makes life bearable. But without going down a philosophical route,
yeah.
That idea has been around for a very long time.
Yeah, for sure. And what did you most like about Bull?
That he was honest.
Yeah.
He doesn't lie about anything. You know what you're going to get
with yeah.
Bull, because he'll tell you straight away. And although his loyalty is misplaced, and as I say, he blusters a bit, he also is very quiet and he listens carefully.
Yeah.
Although he may not agree, he listens. And he's open-hearted enough, or generous enough in a soul, to change his mind
yeah.
and to embrace the change. In the end. Oh, spoiler alert.
I think we can see that from the trailer, so that's okay.
Yeah, probably comedy says it all.
Yeah. Have you worked with Damien before or any of the other members of the cast?
Oh, well, I went to drama school with Penny Cook.
Yep.
And no, I hadn't had anything to do with Damien at all.
So what was it like on set working with such a, well, it's actually a rather big cast.
Mm.
So what was it like working, in Wagga to start off with, and the people in the town? And
well, my auntie Nan lives in Wagga,
yeah.
So does some of my cousins.
Okay.
So I'm quite used to that part of the world. I was born in Corowa, which is just down the road.
Okay.
So that part was easy, not hard to okay. ride around on your bicycle if you're not actually shooting, because it's flat.
Yeah.
No, it was a joy. The wonderful thing about this movie was that because Mark comes from Wagga, he managed to talk almost the whole town into supporting us.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have been able to make that movie without all the help that we were given.
Yeah.
And obviously a lot of it for free.
Mm.
So that part was great. So that was like a very generous introduction to a famous old town, you know, Wagga Wagga. That made the filming very good.
Because it was a 5 week shoot?
6 week shoot, yeah. Which in anyone's term is much quicker than you would like.
Yeah.
But that's the way it goes.
Watching the Merger last night with a crowd, it's always good to see those sort of films with a massive group of people. When you first saw the film on the big screen with a group, what was the feeling like for you seeing it for the first time with a crowd?
Well, I was obviously nervous, although I was always confident. You're never sure, of course, until you see it cut. So,
yeah.
But I was pretty confident that it would work. There were some parts of it that I thought, oh, Jesus Christ, how am I going to get that to work? It can be inordinately difficult to make footy an interesting thing
yeah.
on the screen. You know, fortunately, it's not about footy.
Yeah.
But Damien's writing and Mark's shooting, he did it very cleverly, so it advances the story. It's not just about watching a ball go around.
Yeah.
So that part was good. I was relieved about that. My first audience was Amnesty International.
Okay.
In Sydney. Fox in Sydney.
Yeah.
So I was really interested to see what they would think. The specialist view, of course.
Yeah.
But they came on board because of the subject of the story. And then after that, I have to say, I was just pleasantly surprised. I thought, yeah, that's pretty much what I thought we would get.
Awesome.
That's pretty much what the screenplay told me.
Yep. So obviously you've done a lot of work on screen and on stage. Do you have a preference?
No, I don't have a preference. It's the wonderful thing about theatre is that you're in conversation with the audience that's in the room with you, you know.
Yeah.
There's plenty of warm props. And also you get to tell the story from beginning to end.
Yeah.
And it is a thrill to be, you know, telling the whole story in one go. That's a certain experience. But then film and TV are different in the sense that you do them not always in the right order and they're kind of more technical, if you like. But the actual process of acting is exactly the same. You know, do you know who this person is? Do you know what they're thinking about? Can you act it, John?
Yeah.
Can the camera see it? You know.
Okay.
So they're similar in that sense. You know, do you know how to hit your mark, John, where the camera would like you to be?
Yeah.
It's the same as... do you know not to fall off the stage? You
know what I'm saying? You haven't done that before, have you?
Well, yeah, I've seen people do it. That land in the third row or whatever. Yeah, it happens.
Oh, God.
Not to mention sets burning and being pushed into the audience. And not to mention, you know, people in the audience coming up onto the stage or into the stage.
Really?
Oh, God, yes.
Okay.
I did one show once. Admittedly, it was through the Northern Territory and Northwest Australia, where we started in Perth, about a cattle station. And in a lot of towns, they don't have a theatre, obviously, but they have a breezeway at the local school, right? So you do it in the breezeway.
Yep.
And you've got the kids down the front with the dogs, and then you've got the mothers behind that and the blokes behind that. And you know the story's going well if they all open their beers at exactly the same time, right? But there was a fight in it between me as a cattleman and the guy from Canberra. Well, the kids and the dogs joined in the fight. Completely spastic. Oh, I can tell you lots of stories like that. Well, that rarely happens on a movie. Although sometimes, you never know.
Yeah.
We're in the Namib Desert, I think, and I was playing the people leader. It was pretty...
Mad basic. Max. Yeah.
Yeah. And some notaries from Ossendongo come to watch the set, they're important people in Namibia. And I just appeared as the people leader in full garb and all that, and they looked at me and just ran into the desert. Just ran and kept running. They had no idea what the hell they were dealing with. Probably in the Namib Desert, you don't see many cane toads in what was left of a three-piece suit.
Yeah, no.
Nipple rings.
Yeah,
nipple rings. No nose.
Well, yeah, well, there's a few characters in that they would have ran from for sure, but yeah, yours was...
pretty interesting crew, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, speaking of Mad Max, like, obviously the production delays on that, because obviously they wanted to film it in Broken Hill, but then it rained.
It did.
What was it like for you working on that film? Because it was quite a lengthy production process.
Oh, boy, was it ever. So probably 16 years for George.
Yeah.
Well, for everybody, yeah. Get ready and then wait. That's movies, isn't it? Hurry up and wait.
Yeah. What was it like shooting in the desert, though?
The whole, have you got about a day so I can talk about it? Because it was a cultural thing as well. I've never been to the Namib Desert or to Namibia.
Yeah.
And particularly to, what's a colonial, German colonial town, which looks like a German colonial town, Schwakopmund. And then 2 kilometres away, you know, the shanty town, which is just like Soweto, where most of the Africans live, except for the Ossendongo, who sort of run the country.
Yeah.
I can go on and on about that. The fact that in any direction apart from the Atlantic, of course, there's sand.
Yeah.
Big sand, little sand, gibber sand, all kinds of desert for as far as you can see, as far as you can go. And then the actual shoot itself was... as my father would have said, bigger than Ben-Hur. Every toy.
Yeah.
A colossal crew, 1,000 people, you know. Mm. And a town that moves overnight in the desert for 1,000 people that it's there at 8 o'clock at night, and then somewhere else, 100 kilometres away.
I remember
at 5 o'clock in the morning. And as for the stunties, my God!
Mm.
And there was one broken arm, and one of the polecats hurt his head. One of the Cirque du Soleil guys injured his head. For all they were doing, which was real.
Yeah.
And then on Sundays for fun, they had a flying fox off one of the local mountains there, where they just hold on to a T-bar, right? And then they said they were getting up to 180 Ks.
Wow.
Just for fun on Sunday.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I remember watching the B-roll, and I was like, holy shit.
Well, look at the crusty demons. What were they doing?
Yeah.
Bloody hell. And like, they're in one of the biggest deserts in the world. It's not like anyone's going to be able to put them back together again straight away.
No. Incredible. Well, I suppose that's trust in the production team and George and...
Oh, skill. Yeah. Skill. It's like, the people on it are so skillful in every department.
Yeah. I really hope we get another one. I really do. Maybe in 16 years, we'll see another one.
And I think I'll be playing a different character.
Yeah, well, that's it. And lastly, just to wrap up, like, Bob Jelly from Sea Change is one of your most popular characters.
My favourite.
Mm.
My favourite TV show.
What is it about him that sticks with people even now? Because I told my mother I was interviewing you.
Mm.
Straight away, she was like, Sea Change, love that character.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah. Like, what do you think, why does it sort of still float in people's heads about your character?
Well, I meet people that come up to me and just quietly say, I'm the Bob Jelly of Nil. There's always a big fish in a little pond.
Yeah.
In every, sometimes in every house or in every street. Or in every bowling club, or in every little town, every suburb. There's always the big fish in the little pond. And who keep trying and trying and trying, and hardly anything ever comes off.
Yeah.
But I'll give Bob this, he always bounced back.
Yeah.
Even when he, unfortunately, couldn't jump off the bridge because the tide was out, and it was told by Kevin, probably not a good idea, Bob. Couldn't even get that together.
Yeah.
You know, he always... somehow bounce back with his insane optimism.
For sure. And where do you keep your logie?
It's a very, very secret place.
Very secret place.
I'm not sitting on it.
Well, John, thanks for talking to us. Good luck with the merger. I really enjoyed it, and I really hope it gets up tonight.
You go over the boundary, you're out of play. You go over the fence, you're a spectator. It's a general rule. Try and keep inside both of those.
Here you go, pal.
Well. He wants to give jobs away to riffos who haven't been here 2 minutes. Local jobs
for local. Some people out there don't like what we're doing here.
What are we doing here?
We're rebuilding the footy club.
This isn't a club, it's a joke, mate.
Refugees need our help and we need theirs.
Why do you hate refugees so much?
They just don't belong here.
If we go home, terrorists will kill us, chemical weapons will kill us, bombs will kill us.
Anyone who still hates you is a bloody idiot. I mean, look what you have done. You're amazing.
Where is Aleppo?
Oh, what's left of it is in the north of Syria.
Yeah, because nothing's coming up on TripAdvisor.